Appeals. We only have one case on our docket this afternoon for oral argument. The panel this afternoon is to my left, Justice Sue Walker, to my right, Justice Leanne Dofino, and I am Lee Gabriel. If the clerk would call the case, please.
The court will now call the City of Keller versus Kimberly Diane Meadows Hall and A. Thomas Hall. May it please the court, Mr. Frederick Chris Fox will argue for the appellant. Mr. Michael J. Ramone will argue for the appellate.
May it please the court, my name is Fritz Quast. I'm here, of course, on behalf of the City of Keller. In front of you, I believe I've provided a map that is located in the record. I don't have the specific record reference. Some of this map is located in the record. I couldn't get the edges quite like it is in the record. I'm just providing that to the court today, essentially to keep me from having to wave my arms around and tell you what the property or what the surrounding vicinity looks like. Also, concerning the record, as we were doing our briefs in this case, I realized that some of the exhibits are horribly, horribly hard to read. Mr. Berner and I have discussed filing a motion for the originals to be submitted to the Court of Appeals. If the court has gotten into the record and noticed that, we're going to be taking care of that. And hopefully the originals that we submitted to the trial court will be a little easier to read, because some of those flood maps, their copies of copies are that are in the record, at least the version I saw, essentially worthless. We're going to be trying to fix that very shortly. As for procedural and factual background, this is, of course, an inverse condemnation against the City of Keller. For damages from flooding on a six-acre piece of property located at Keller Smithfield Road and Bear Creek Parkway in the City of Keller. Located on this map, you'll see the Keller Smithfield Road running essentially northeast to the southwest slightly. The property is essentially to the east of there, where you see a donut, a yellow circle. That is where the residence on the property is situated. And then, of course, you can see the Bear Creek Parkway as it goes under the bridge. And essentially, Bear Creek Parkway flows from, if you're looking at the map, from left to right. You'll see after it goes under the bridge, it goes a little farther to the east, and then it goes to the south. Where it goes to the south, it enters the Hall's property. And then it goes through the Hall property. And approximately where that red line is where the golf course property is located. And you'll see that the part, the building you can see directly to the south there, that is the golf course maintenance shed. Just trying to give the court a little background as to what the vicinity looks like. Mrs. Hall acquired the property in about 1985, her and a former husband. The barns that you'll see, you can barely see them here, were built in about 1986 at an elevation of about 638. There's also a utility building that was initially flooded in this case at the elevation of 639. Almost all of this property has always been located within the 100-year floodplain. The residence was built in about 1989, and of course it's located on that yellow pad, which essentially to build the residence they had to import lots of dirt and build essentially a 6-foot mound to put the residence on to get it out of the floodplain. Everyone admits, everyone knows that this property is essentially flood prone and that it has always been subject to flooding. Essentially, I want to remind the court that when I talk about a 100-year flood, I don't mean something that occurs once and then we just get to wait 99 years and it's not going to happen again. 100-year flood means that there is a 0.1% chance in any given year, a 1% chance in any given year that the flooding will occur at this level, at that magnitude. On this map, if you'll see the blue outlines, that is essentially the new 100-year flood. This is from a 2009 flood study. The shaded portion of blue is essentially the before that study what the 100-year flood was. So as you can see, the 100-year flood essentially has inundated the property. In 2006, the city, there was a time when Keller Smithfield Road was just a two-lane asphalt kind of country road. Now it is essentially a four-lane divided road. In 2006, the city took a project on to raise the road to get it out of the floodplain and to essentially get the bridge above the floodplain. The golf course improvements, because those concerns and co-defendants, were constructed approximately 1999. Along this case is essentially, this is from a 2009 Texas Supreme Court case. For the purposes of Article 1, Section 17, a government entity acts intentionally if it knows either that specific act was causing identifiable harm or specific property damage was substantially certain to occur from the act. A government entity is substantially certain that its actions will damage property only when the damage is necessarily incident to or necessarily a consequential result of the entity's action. The government's knowledge must be determined at the time it acted and not with the benefit of hindsight. That's City of San Antonio versus Pollack, 284 Southwest 3rd, 809, 2009 Texas Supreme Court case. Previously in the Wilson case, I know Justice Walker drafted the opinion or wrote the opinion concerning that case before this court, now going on 12 years ago. The critical question in this case is the city's state of mind. The Wilsons had to prove that the city knew, not should have known, that flooding was substantially certain. A reviewing court cannot evaluate what the city knew by disregarding most of what it was told. In this case, I've submitted every scrap of paper, every report, every letter that we could get our hands on that discusses the flooding situation on this property and its vicinity. We submitted that to the court and said, look, everything that the city approved, everything that the city did, the studies came back showing that there's not going to be an increase, at least for the 100-year flood, there's not going to be an increase of flooding on this property. The 1982 flood insurance study and flood insurance map depicted the flood levels at 644.9. 1995 is the same number, 644.9. All of the studies that have ever been done, as painstakingly detailed in the brief, show that either there would be no increase in the flood level, the 100-year flood, or there would be a slight decrease. The appellees in this case, have submitted several arguments as to why the city had to have known the flooding was going to occur. Their first argument, and essentially the one that the only one they pled, was this. Since that road was raised and the new bridge was constructed, essentially what you've done is you've created an upstream dam. And essentially water backs up from downstream, and essentially the upstream dam of that raised road keeps the water from flowing back up, and essentially that is the reason for the flooding. Again, that is their theory now. Nothing in the city's studies, nothing that the city had in its possession at the time that the road bridge were approved or that it was being constructed, showed that essentially the city knew that anything like that was going to happen. Of course, we dispute whether that's factually true, but it doesn't matter. We didn't have the benefit of their expert's opinion or the appellee's lay opinion about what happened at the time we constructed these improvements. I'd also like to point out that the first significant flooding in this case, essentially the first allegation was there was a big flood on June 18th of 2007. June 18th of 2007. Essentially, they're saying, well, that was just a two-year flood. That was only a two-year flood. And look, I mean, used to it would flood, but it would take a lot more rain. Now, anytime we get an insignificant rain event, you're going to get flooding on this property. Well, first of all, factually speaking, that's a bunch of bunk. The court has recently held handed down the opinion in City of Haltom City versus Arl. It discusses the magnitude of the flood. It concerns a trailer park in Haltom City where some kids were killed. And essentially, part of the facts in that case were there was some flooding in Kirk Keller, and that's where some Haltom City Fire Department people were responding to situations in Keller. So, first of all, the factual assertion that this flood, or this first flood, the one that caused them to sue initially, was a two-year flood is ridiculous. But for the purposes of plea of jurisdiction, let's assume, okay, that that flood event was a two-year flood. There's nothing in any of the flood studies that show what happens when you have a two-year event. All of these flood studies, and again, hopefully the exhibits will be better, easier to read, but anytime you have a flood study, y'all are going to see pages that look like graph paper, okay? And it's going to show where the, essentially, elevation of the stream bank, the stream bed. It's going to show the 25-year flood, the 50-year flood, the 100-year, and the 500-year, all on that page. And if you compare those throughout, there's no significant change. And relevant to this argument, there is no studies done as to what happens when you have a two-year flood. There's nothing in the record. There's no reports. You don't study rain events of that magnitude. Another theory offered by the plaintiff, the appellees in this case, is essentially, well, we all know that both upstream and downstream of this property, since 1982, there has been a tremendous amount of development, and no one can deny that, no one can get around that. That is absolutely the case. This area of Tarrant County has absolutely boomed. And essentially what his position is that, well, all of those studies that you performed over the years, they all use the same discharge numbers. When I say discharge numbers, that means the amount of water that is being held in the stream at the point where you're taking the measurements. And that can change depending on, well, you're getting more water in the stream upstream. That means that the cubic feet per second during this type of event is going to be more depending on the upstream development. But if you think of this practically, it's not the city's. Think of it this way. Somebody comes into town, they want to develop a subdivision, and I'm going to change the creek. That's fine, Mr. Developer, but you're going to have to commission a thousands of dollar flood study for the entire watershed of Big Bear Creek to tell us whether whether there's been any changes in the cubic feet per second since this study was last done. Another problem with that argument is essentially the watershed of Big Bear Creek is literally if you look at this map, it shows tributary BB11. It flows into Big Bear Creek just upstream of the bridge. Upstream from there, there's over 11 square miles in the watershed. Less than 30% of that is in the city of Keller. Most of it is in Tarrant County, or unincorporated Tarrant County. Some of it is in Fort Worth. Some of it is even in the city of Hazlitt. I guess my point being here, this aggregate development theory fails because it is not the city of Keller's responsibility to control flooding or to worry about what's happening way upstream. Also, as noted in the Wilson case, the city of Keller has very specific regulations that require that when you come in and you put a property in, whatever's coming off that property for a 100-year rain event has to be the same pre-development and post-development. In other words, it can't change. What they're saying is, well, you knew all this property development happened, and you knew that meant that the amount of water in the creek was going to increase. Well, that assumes that the city never, ever, ever enforced this ordinance that required developers to design their developments such that didn't occur. Lastly, if you look at the Wilson case, that was a case to where there were two developments at the head of a drainage channel. And the plaintiff got the city officials to admit that there were going to be some discharge from those developments. Once they were developed, more water was going to come off of them. The Supreme Court said, evidence that you're going to get more water at the top of a drainage system is not evidence there's going to be flooding at the bottom. All right, and that was for a 200-yard long, 45-foot wide drainage easement. Okay? Just because you're going to get more water up here doesn't mean it's going to cause any problems down here. Mr. Vernon is taking that argument and essentially extrapolating it over an 11 square mile waterbed. Essentially, we're supposed to be responsible for anything that occurs upstream, downstream. That can't be the law. Lastly, their argument is, well, we've told you that these floods are happening and they're recurring, but you're not doing anything about it. Again, Your Honor, if you look at all the cases concerning this, it talks about acts, affirmative acts of the government, not failing to do something. Unless the court has any questions, my time is up. I'll give it to Mr. Vernon.
May it please the court, as the clerk announced, my name is Michael Vernon, and I'm here on behalf of Tom and Kim Hall, who are the appellees here. I was amused when I saw the city's brief, and it started with the words of a favorite song of mine from CCR. The great thing about this is, like most of what we've heard already, is that this case is not about rain. It's not about rain. It's about a river, about a creek, Big Bear Creek. And so rather than follow that false literary trail that led off the appellant's brief, I thought it'd be more appropriate to go to literary reference that is found in one of the cases that truly controls how we should address this case, and those are in the words of Justice Norville in the Brazos River case against the City of Grant. He points out that trying to make the distinctions that are made by the appellants here will lead us to a sophistic Miltonian Serbian bog. And the literary reference there is very apropos in this case. Sophistic in the sense that it's false and misleading, it's specious. Milton gets you to go read book two of
Paradise Lost.
Thank you. Lines 592 and 594, where he refers to that land beyond the Lethe River as an abyss where armies are known to fail and fall. The descriptions of the rivers of Hades in that case, particularly the one of Lethe here, is really unique. Lethe is described in Milton as being the small silent stream, far removed from Styx and Plegethon and Cocytus. It's separate, and in this case, Big Bear Creek is normally that creek. At least it is on the City of Keller's property. And remember, this isn't just a regulation case. This is a City of Keller owns the creek bed, all directly west of the bridge that's in question, and all directly north of the Hall property, which, interestingly enough, in the context of Paradise Lost, is known on its plat as Sunny Meadow. It's no longer a paradise. 5.37 acres surrounded by a city with its own creek that now, unfortunately, every time there's a 2-year rain event, comes under 3 feet to 5.5 feet of water. Not quite to the 100-year flood stage, which would be 6 feet, but certainly well beyond the bargain for drainage easement that the City of Keller exacted from my client in 1986 when they platted the property. So this isn't a question of whether floodwaters are going beyond the anticipated 100-year flood stage. This is the City of Keller is dumping water from its own owned property onto my client's property beyond an easement for which they bargained years ago.
But isn't the issue before us really fairly simple? Because the City of Keller versus Wilson case dealt with an appeal after a judgment entered on a jury verdict. And so the standard of review we applied was a legal and factual sufficiency of the evidence standard of review. But here we have a plea to the jurisdiction. So the standard of review that we're looking at is just whether looking basically at all the facts that you've pleaded and the evidence that you've come forward, whether or not there's a scintilla of evidence, because it looks like the only element the city has challenged is whether they knew that this flooding was substantially certain to occur. And so it's a different standard of review. And so if you can just tell us, what is the jurisdictional evidence that you introduced showing that the city either knew or was substantially certain that this flooding was going to occur?
Well, Justice Walker, I think the evidence here goes in two directions. Number one is, as the appellant noted, so they put in, or attempted to put in, I should say, they attempted to put in what was described as every scrap of paper we could find. Every scrap of paper does not define what the city did or didn't know. They were not able to produce but a single witness who was involved in this project, this area, at the time it was done. And he had no involvement with the construction of the project. He was a maintenance manager of the park that lies directly west of the Hall property. The city and the courts and we here cannot abandon what is very obvious, and things can be proved circumstantially. Okay. There was a history of flooding in the area. It's set out in the record that before the bridge and road construction, the bridge was small, the opening was small, the road lay at roughly the same level, elevation-wise, as the Hall property, and if it built up, water would spill across very casually in the small silent streams type across the Hall property. The whole purpose of this road project was to take the roadway and the bridge out of that floodplain so that there would no longer be that portion of the city property within that road. Right there, they tell you what they know they are doing. They are taking their piece of property and improving it so that it doesn't suffer these ill effects. They took the opening of the bridgeway, and it's in the record. The opening now underneath the new bridge, which is now 9 feet above where the old bridge lay, is 4 to 5 times the size. Common sense tells you, and in fact, the example I used in the court below, if you take a 2-liter Coke bottle, nice big round bottle, very small opening so you can control what comes out and how fast. You pour it, it comes out at the certain speed. The water used to back up behind the roadway and the old bridge in a broad fashion, and it would come through a little hole, and it managed the flow that way. You want to change that? Turn that bottle upside down, cut the top off, and dump it all out. That's what this road bridge project is designed to do, with no regard for what happens downstream.
What evidence do you have that that's what it was designed to do? Because I think that's what her question was, and I've heard you say that there's circumstantial evidence, but when they have documents that say this is what the studies show and it shows it's not going to change it, what do you have? Or are you just asking us to take that leap of faith?
No. Well, first, in one of the small deposition excerpts of one of the city designated representatives, they do admit that the project was designed to take the road and the bridge out of the floodway. So that leads you there. Secondarily, there is the evidence from Ms. Hall, who tells you that from way before the road bridge construction started, she was complaining about flooding. And then as it continued, she wrote, and the documents are in the record, she wrote the city and said, this isn't looking good, you're causing flooding. And oh, by the way, the last one, while the project, you're turning me into a lake. Did they stop? Did they review? No, they didn't. They took it at what they did, and they didn't care. They, you know, common sense points these things out. The city knows this. They are put on actual direct notice that this is what they're doing.
What affirmative act did they take after they were put on direct notice?
They continued building the project exactly as is and dismissed her. And what they did is they referred her to these studies that said, we looked, and your 100-year floodplain is supposedly not going to change. This isn't a question about what happened to the 100-year floodplain. This is a question of how much water the city of Keller is dumping off of its own property as a nuisance onto her property beyond what they're legally entitled to do by reason of easement or otherwise. This case is not a Wilson case. This case isn't about what did they know at the time they approved one time a plat approval. This is they affirmatively built a road project with knowledge of conditions. They did what was best for them as a property owner and took that out on the benefit, the rights to enjoy the property of the downstream plat, the downstream property that's owned by the Halls.
So you're saying we're not to look at what the city knew or what they were substantially certain of was going to be the result of their actions at the time that the decision was made?
What I'm saying is that they know more than their documents show. What I'm also saying, and this is the second part of my answer to Justice Walker's question, the cases that involve nuisance have not invoked this intent at the time element. These cases deal with what does the city learn as they continue to operate their city facilities after construction. This is what is held in the Brazos River case. This is what's held in the Gragg case.
This is a nuisance case and not an inverse condemnation case?
Inverse condemnation can arise by nuisance, and that's what this is. There's more than one way to get this, but these cases hold that inverse condemnation arises when the continued operation of a city facility, a city project, then emburdens a property with a lack of enjoyment, an improper use, a taking, a damage, a destruction without compensation. In the Brazos River case, Possum Kingdom Dam had been there for years, but the water treatment plant had been there for years before. The continued interruption of the water flow on the Brazos by the dam caused siltation buildup, ultimately backing up the water levels to a point to where they exceeded the prior known elevations of the City of Graham's water treatment plant. Absolutely, inverse condemnation case. More to the point, the Gragg case is a downstream release case. We're the downstream property holder here. The Tarrant County Water District was held responsible for the property that they caused downstream, the flooding that they caused by time after time release of property through the Richland Chambers Dam. They continue to operate. Once you know that you're doing something, then you have the affirmative duty to not do it, even if you're the government. You then can know that you are taking property, and that's improper. The Constitution says you can't do that. The Pollock case, for example, and even the Orell case, they comment anecdotally, as much as anything, on what cities can and should do, and these actions are not here in Pollock. They knew they had a migration issue. They started buying up properties. They started drilling wells. They put in gas abatement mechanisms. And ultimately, on the condemnation issue, what was held was that this isn't a wrongful taking. This is a negligent failure to remediate case, and you lose on inverse condemnation. In Orell, they said the city took federal and state funds, started buying up houses that were in the flood areas, started putting up signs. They said, this is a negligent undertaking case, not a condemnation case. So they distinguished these after-the-fact actions as making them not condemnation. But Gragg and the Brazos River Water Authority cases absolutely demonstrate from both the upstream riparian and the downstream riparian situations that when the government controls the flow of water, in this case, in the Hall case, through owned property, City of Keller owns everything west and everything north. I mean, they control that entire waterway. That now that they know, as at the time this case was filed, I think there were 4 floods. There was the big one, 1 small one before, 2 since. We are up to 9 as of 1 month ago. The biggest significant, I mean, the most significant rainfall in the area was about a 2-year rain event. We haven't come close to a 100-year rain event, according to the weather data that's in the record. Yet we've had 3.5 to 5 feet of water on the Hall property on a repeated basis 9 times since this project was built. It never did that before. And the cases show that you can prove this intent, this causation, when if something didn't happen before it, now it happens now. And the weather data shows that we're not outside the norm, which excludes Mother Nature, as was put by one of the commentators, one of the writers. Then this is where we are. The result is that the government is responsible for this, and the government has the obligation to not cause this harm on the property, or they have the obligation to compensate. And that's where we are here. This is a case about jurisdiction. The pleadings adequately plead this case. I'll note, because the question was raised about perhaps going outside the pleadings, the city chose to challenge the Hall's case by both pleaded jurisdiction and summary judgment. And a summary judgment hearing was held. That's a trial. And if that evidence goes outside of whatever they say was pled, that's trial by consent. There are no special exceptions. There are no objections. All of the Hall's evidence is in this record. None of the objections of the city were overturned. There is obviously more than a scintilla in every single element that we need to prove, and these people are entitled to their jury trial. Thank you.
I'm going to essentially start off where I let out, because it appears that that's essentially what Mr. Vernon has sort of focused on, essentially the allegation that we put this road and this bridge in and we continued operating it. What does that mean? How do you continue to operate a road or a bridge? You stick it in there, and if there are problems that show up later, what do you do at that point? All the cases that he's talking about talk about continuing or recurring actions by the government. Let's talk about Gregg. Okay, Gregg was that flooding case by the Trinity River Authority. The Tarrant Regional Water District. And essentially, what that was is every time that the district opened the floodgates, downstream property would flood. They said, "You're flooding my property." They would open the floodgates again, flood the property. Essentially, you have continuing, recurring, affirmative actions by the government. That's how you distinguish it. Here, he's saying, well, now you're not doing anything about it. Well, what exactly can we do?
Well, Fritz, didn't the water flow over that road? And what, if the water's flowing over the road and you raised the road, so the water wouldn't flow over it, where'd you think the water was going to go?
Well, if the water does, essentially, if the water is going to do anything by the road being raised and the opening being, it's going to stay upstream a little longer, okay? And regardless of what we say or whether we have Coke bottle analogies, I have an analogy of my own. You know, I'm holding my thumb over the garden hose and I make the hole bigger. What happens? The velocity of the water decreases. But again, we don't need to worry about analogies or, lay opinions or anything like that. We need to look at what was the city told? When you put this bridge in, when you raise this road, what's it going to do? And he talks about the two-year flood. And again, there's nothing in the record about what happens in a two-year flood. We can infer, because if a 100-year flood doesn't necessarily raise cause a concern, then a two-year flood certainly wouldn't either. But there's nothing in the record that said, well, with lesser significant rainfall events, you're going to have a problem. There's nothing in there.
I have a question about the standard of review.
Sure.
Because the standard of review is whether or not there's a genuine issue of material fact, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. And so how can the plaintiff ever prove that there's a genuine issue of material fact about what the city of Keller knew? I mean, how don't we have to view all the evidence in the light most favorable to them?
That is true, but you have to look at all the evidence. And essentially, I think in the Wilson case, the Supreme Court touched on this. They have to find some objective indicia that what the city was relying on was not correct.
So you're saying that the standard of review that we look at the evidence is the same for a judgment after a jury verdict as in a summary judgment?
Essentially, yes. Well, in this case, Your Honor, it's a plea of the jurisdiction, and they have pled knowledge on the part of the city. So in a plea of the jurisdiction, once they've pled that fact, I have to essentially go forward and negate it with evidence. So here's all the evidence of what the city knew. They had 2 years to serve whatever discovery they wanted to depose whoever the heck they wanted to figure out to show that, no, you knew something else. That didn't happen. With respect to the complaints of Mrs. Hall during the road and bridge construction, she had several complaints with the city. All of those are outlined in the record. And essentially what she was complaining about was originally her house faced Keller Smithfield Road and her driveway was to Keller Smithfield Road. They essentially had to take the driveway over to the side, and she had some complaints about some pooling of water in front of her house. Pooling of water while they were constructing it. They hadn't leveled it out yet. There's water pooling. Looks like I'm going to be a lake. pooling, when water falls from the sky and stays on my property and pools, that's different from, you know, the creek rising in the back. So her complaints really don't have anything to do with flooding as far as from the creek goes. And essentially what happened was the city said to the project manager, a lady named Kelly Dillard, she wrote a letter and said, there's nothing to be concerned about. Once we level this out, all the water is going to flow to the creek, and there's nothing in the studies that show it's going to increase the flood-prone characteristics of your property. There's nothing with that opinion that they've raised any issue with, and that's what she was told. That's what the city relied on. We're entitled to do that. Unless the court has any other questions, I'll sit down.
Thank you very much. We appreciate the briefing and your arguments, and we also appreciate your efforts to get the original exhibits here, because I think that will be very helpful. So we will count on you to follow through on that, and your case is submitted, and you are excused for today. Thank you.
All rise.